Well, good afternoon to you all and welcome to my presentation. I'm called Doreen. I'm a general practice physician, born, raised and I trained in Uganda, and I got my Master's of Public Health from Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland in May of this year, just before I submitted the abstract. And I'm going to be, the title of my presentation today is The Need for New Approaches to Global Health System Reform, the Case of Healthcare Worker Migration in Uganda. I have no relationships to disclose. I'll be presenting results of a survey that I conducted in Uganda in January and February of 2010. And before I go into the specific objectives, I'll kind of give you a brief background of what made me interested in this topic. We all know that medical migration from developing to developed countries and from rural to urban areas is of substantial importance. For in the public health field, it creates a weakening in health system infrastructure, especially in developing countries. And also it impedes health system reform. I conducted the survey following the announcement of President Obama's Global Health Initiative, and Kezia Family Foundation did a survey in October 2009, and more than 50%, actually majority of Americans were preferring emphasis on health system infrastructure strengthening as opposed to fighting specific illnesses, diseases like TB, malaria, or HIV, and I thought it made sense to me. So about Uganda, Uganda is located in East Africa, and its area comparative of, in America, it's Oregon. It has a population of about 32 million people, and it has a high HIV prevalence rate, 5.4, and the life expectancy is 52.72. This slide here is relevant to the area where I conducted my survey. The red and purple areas are the central and the western region. It's divided into four administrative regions, the northern, central, western, and eastern regions. So I concentrated in the western and central regions. Each region is divided into districts. Generally, the country is divided into 80 districts. Each district is divided into a sub-district, sub-county, a parish, up to the village health team level. I don't know if most of you are familiar with decentralization of government and service delivery, which the policy derived guidance from the Alma Ata Declaration of Health for All in 1978. So the learning objectives, as I conducted the survey, I wanted to learn and from the Ugandan health workforce, the healthcare workers themselves, the health policymakers and implementers, the students who are training in healthcare, about what they think about healthcare worker migration, if they think it has an impact, and if so, what kind of impact. And also, I just wanted to get their general attitudes to healthcare delivery in their setting. The study was a cross-sectional survey, and it was conducted by interview-administered questionnaire. I did the interviews myself, which lasted about 30 to 45 minutes, and I'll be presenting results of a descriptive analysis of the demographics, knowledge and attitudes, and of policymakers, implementers, students, basically the three different groups within my population of study, and I did the descriptive analysis using the SPSS package. This slide here shows you the sampling method that I used or that I wanted to use. And I conducted my interviews moving from the rural areas up to the urban center. Like I explained to you, decentralization, kind of decentralized government power. So within different ministries, like I focused on the Ministry of Health, but you have to move from the village health team, then to health center 2, health center 3, health center 4. These are usually located in rural areas. And then to the district hospital, regional referral hospital, up to the national referral hospital. And these derive their policy from the Ministry of Health. Health center 2s and health center 3s are primary centers. Health center 4 is a secondary center, and then district hospitals are tertiary centers. So they refer from up, going from down, going upwards. This slide gives you an idea of what a health center two, which is like the lowest health facility in the country, looks like. And health center twos, health center threes are staffed with healthcare providers like nurses who will provide preventative services, immunization, you know, family planning, counseling, prevention of mother to child transmission of HIV, and they are equipped with ambulances to refer cases, which they can't manage to an upper level. This slide here will give you an idea of what the National Referral Hospital looks like and what a district hospital looks like. In the left lower corner is the district hospital. And generally, the National Referral Hospital sees more than, I hope according to how I'm explaining to you, get a general idea that the lower health centers see less than the upper tier. And I conducted a total of 62 interviews for the two-month period that I was there. I got interviews with three high-ranking policymakers. This included the Vice President of the Republic of Uganda, the Director General of Health Services, and the Commissioner for Health Policy at the Ministry of Health level, 13 policy implementers. I want to mention that the three high-ranking policymakers are also physicians. The 13 policy implementers included what we call medical superintendents, seven of them, and then six of them were community health representatives who are like on the village health team and the health center levels. These are in charge of bridging the gap between the community and the people that the several health centers serve. And the medical superintendents are in charge of the day-to-day running of the health facilities that they run. They are most of them are healthcare workers as well. They are trained, either they're like top-tier nursing staff or medical staff. And I also interviewed 30 healthcare workers. Medical healthcare workers is included physicians, nurses, and some allied health professionals like pharmacy, laboratory techs, and 16 students who are training in healthcare. I'm going to try run through the demographic descriptive slides because of time. The gender distribution was pretty much even, and I already explained much of what is in these slides. One thing I want to mention is that when I was doing the survey, I kind of wanted to figure out how many of the healthcare workers were born and raised in rural Uganda, and how many were born and raised in urban Uganda. I kind of thought that I would find a relationship between who wants to go back to work in a rural area as opposed to who wants to stay in an urban area. Most of the students were graduating in 2010 and 2011. And the question of is healthcare worker migration a problem in Uganda was answered by an overwhelming yes across the three different study groups, the policy, the healthcare workers, and the students. And why do you think it's a problem? Most of I highlighted the first four top reasons which were given: understaffing in the healthcare system. Already there's an existing understaffing in the healthcare system, which leads to a heavy workload. And the poor pay remuneration and poor patient outcomes was given especially by the healthcare workers who are already practicing within the system. Students mentioned a lack of advanced medical practice to be one of the reasons why healthcare worker migration is a problem. Does healthcare worker migration have an impact? Again, it was answered by an overwhelming yes, and most of them said it has a negative impact. What kind of impact? It leads to understaffing, it creates a heavy workload, leads to poor patient outcomes, leads to uneven distribution of health workers, especially in rural and urban areas, and also it leads to long patient waiting lines. Now, when they explained understaffing and the heavy workload and poor patient outcomes, it was generally an expression of like professional frustration, because most of the healthcare workers are, by the time they graduate from school to enter into the system, they already find an existing understaffing, and there's a heavy workload, which leads to fatigue, you know, professional fatigue. And because there's a high infectious disease burden, if you're seeing like 100 or 200 patients a day, you don't feel like you give enough time to the patients that you see as much as you'd want to see. A majority of people knew a worker who had migrated from rural to an urban setting, and also international migration. Majority of the people I interviewed knew somebody who had migrated internationally. And I also examined the intent to migrate among the workers, and it's 73.3%. Students, all the students I interviewed wanted to migrate from Uganda. And the destination of migration is not even from like a rural setting to an urban setting, but they want to migrate out of the country. So you can see that there's this system where everybody is thinking, I'll go to school, train regardless of if it's government money or if I'm paying for it, but the focus is I'll migrate if I get a chance to do that. Why would they want to migrate from a rural to an urban location? Better amenities in the urban areas, better pay remuneration. For physicians who work in rural urban setting in government hospitals, they don't say there's so much of a difference. But there's more options for moonlighting in urban areas because there's private hospitals, there's NGO best practices, there's more projects to work on and feel like you get more money there. And there's generally better hospital infrastructure, especially for the private hospitals, which are staffed like with better diagnostics in a good location. And also there are better chances for further training because in the rural areas, there's not that many schools. As a matter of fact, most of the health centers in the rural areas are not staffed with the people that are supposed to be staffing them. They are mostly staffed with underqualified people because those are the ones who are looking for a salary, and those are the ones who can bear to live in an area where there's not, you know, running water, electricity. The reasons they gave for international migration included the search for better pay, remuneration, and also further training opportunities. They also mentioned other reasons like getting away from a corruption system, getting better job satisfaction, also political harassment, especially in the lower levels. Because of the decentralization of power by government, different councils have to work together. The health council has to work together with the education council, has to work together with the local government officials. And sometimes there's a clash between all these people at the different levels of governance. This slide here shows you the one in the left, in the left lower hand corner shows you downtown Kampala, which is the capital city of Uganda, and the upper one shows you a rural town, how it looks like, so you kind of get the feel of the work setting. The challenges faced by workers in delivering health care. One of the things which I found very interesting was the lack of essential medicines. Like I explained to you, the Ministry of Health is in charge of distributing. It's like the central place where everything goes in, the diagnostics, diagnostic equipment, medicines, and it's in charge of delivering that and making sure it reaches the lowest level. But because of that whole string, you know, that whole chain which they have to go through, the essential staff which are supposed to be delivered at some of these health centers doesn't get there on time. Understaffing, again, is a problem. Heavy workload as a result of the understaffing, lack of diagnostics in areas. I also have to mention that in some areas, in rural centers, they'll order things, but because they have no people to staff the posts, some of the diagnostic like materials end up expiring before they're actually put to use. The poor facility infrastructure, I'll show you a slide which will give you an idea of how some of the facilities look. The challenges faced by patients looking for health care, long waiting lines, lack of essential medicines. Now, when I say this, it might sound odd to you, because here, it's a different system, but the way it works is that the government-owned facilities, when you walk into them, you're supposed to get total care. They're supposed to be in charge of treating you, diagnosing you, supplying you with medication if you're admitted, and then they discharge you when you're well. But it doesn't always work like that. There's no established insurance plan in Uganda. The strength that most people, especially the policy the implementers said, is that they have committed staff for the few who are willing to endure the heavy workloads. And the teaching hospitals have more staff, as it is in any other area. The teaching hospitals are lucky because they have attendings and other people who kind of buffer up the whole human resource. This slide here shows you the long person waiting lines, and I try to get pictures at different levels of the system, from a district level to a health center four, and to a health center two. Even a health center two, which is just supposed to provide preventive services, is overwhelmed. One thing I want to mention to you is that over the last 20 years, well, you get the fertility rate in Uganda is like 7.8, but over the last 20 years, the health facilities haven't really changed to accommodate the growing population. So the problem of long waiting patient lines is very big. This again kind of gives you an idea of why there's poor hospital infrastructure. There's not that many curtains to separate the patients in an area which is plagued by infectious disease. The key priorities which were given to improve healthcare delivery across three groups, especially the healthcare workers, they said at least they should improve the medicine supply chain. It's one thing to know that you can treat some, especially a preventable illness, you know, if you can give something and it goes away. And it's another thing to see somebody dying from something like that just because the medicine was not there, you know, like malaria. Increased pay remuneration was the second one, then improve hospital infrastructure so that it can accommodate the growing population. And then also retain the healthcare workers, prevent healthcare worker brain drain. They're thinking that the government should kind of figure out a way of bringing back the workers who have migrated and creating incentives which are non-monetary, because the problem of poor pay remuneration is huge and everybody appreciates that. But at least if they have better working environments and they know that they can practice the medicine that they learned in school without limitations, that would kind of make them stay right there. So, the problem, we see that the problem of poor pay and remuneration will continue to be a driving force for migration. And but also we see that beyond the problem of poor pay remuneration, the few workers would be willing to go back are frustrated because of the existing understaffing in the health system. And the professionals are very frustrated and they are not very satisfied because generally of their working environment. It's kind of like a vicious cycle where one thing leads to another. The take-home message from this little survey that I did is that across the whole healthcare worker machine, we see that yes, the problem of healthcare worker remuneration will continue to encourage migration, but we also see clearly that it's not the only problem. In Uganda, the general lack of adequate manpower, the poor facility infrastructures, and lack of amenities in rural areas seem to play a huge role in creating a vicious cycle that fuels both the rural to urban and then international migration. It usually starts as a cycle. And also the study suggests that there's an overwhelming majority of healthcare workers who have an intent to migrate out of country. So I feel like this study addressed a relevant and timely topic, and it will also add to an existing body of literature. But and also focusing on it helped me look at migration beyond the issue of more money, because generally people assume healthcare workers migrate from developing countries to developed countries because of search for better pay, but that's not the only reason. And the main limitation is that there's lack of statistical power, because I did like 62 interviews. I can't be able to pull up some themes and do subgroup analysis. But I'm hoping that in the future I can do a larger study with more participants based on the findings that have been elucidated by this cross-sectional survey. And I would also love to interview more policymakers at the Ministry of Health level rather than implementers and obtain their thoughts and ideas concerning the magnitude of this issue. Thank you. Yes,
Jill. I have two questions. First of all, was there any of your results that really surprised you? Mm-hmm. And second of all, is there any dissemination of your findings to the policymakers, even given that the lack of statistical power, do they know the extent to which migration is a problem?
Yeah, thanks for that question. Yes, the results surprised me. When I was undertaking the survey, I expected to find a majority of people saying we are migrating because we don't have enough money. They don't pay us enough money, and today it's like the world is a global village. I know I can go work somewhere else and get lots more money. But actually, people want to work. But the infrastructure, the lack of timely supply of the essential medicines, the lack of diagnostics, advanced medical practices, which the government is not necessarily focusing on, frustrates them. And yes, I wrote a report for the Ministry of Health in Uganda to kind of, to me this was kind of like a pilot study to tell them, look, people are not really moving because they are greedy. People are moving because you don't make accommodations for them. You don't have non-monetary incentives. There's not enough scholarships, you know. So everybody's kind of hustling on their own, and it causes them to migrate. And I'm hoping to get a grant to expand on this research. Yes.
In the study, you found that, for instance, there are a lot of logistical problems, mm-hmm. like the lack of medicine and infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And I know that Uganda has many NGOs working in place. Is that a solution to look to the NGOs or no?
In
specifics to be guided by your study.
Mm-hmm. Sure. When I was starting the study, my general attitude is that developing countries depend so much on donor-funded projects. But you have to realize that the donor-funded projects also have their own policies, which they have to satisfy when they come there. And so actually part of the migration has been caused by the NGOs, because you know that if you work in an NGO project, you'll get paid as somebody who's working in an international setting. And also the NGOs mostly will come and they don't, most NGOs don't establish sustainable projects. You know, if I come there and put up like a WHO class 4 like laboratory, but once I've done my research and collected my data, after 5 years I pack up and leave, I don't think you're doing so much to help. And sometimes they even come with their own manpower, so it's not like they're training to have like a sustainability around. But also what I'm saying is that the Uganda government should focus on fixing the problem themselves instead of, because it's just a basic problem, you know. Train more, try retain the people that you train, and improve the infrastructure. You know, the population is growing. We can't be working in infrastructure which was there like 20 years ago. And I hope I answered your question. Okay, if there are no other questions, thank you so much for attending.